The Indian Legal Program within ASU's O'Connor College of Law is hosting a conference today and tomorrow dealing with tribal governments and e-commerce. It'll deal with topics including tribal sovereignty, legal issues, and infrastructure. Robert Clinton is Foundation Professor of Law at the O'Connor College of Law and teaches in the Indian Legal Program in areas including Indian gaming and cyberspace law. I asked him how much e-commerce tribes do now.
Tribes are involved in some of that already. The Winnebago, for whom I work, I should disclose I'm their Chief Justice, actually have been selling goods online for years. There are other tribes who are engaged in financial services online already.
Is this something that tribes in Arizona have been doing?
I'm less knowledgeable about tribes in Arizona doing it than tribes in California and in other spaces. But the basic problem is really quite simple. We have tribes who have very good locations to conduct brick-and-mortar businesses. For example, the tribes in the valley, like Salt River or Gila River, obviously are in very good locations, have large gaming, hotel, resort complexes and other businesses because they're situated in a large metropolitan area. So the Internet may not be as attractive to them as it may be in a tribe in a more remote area. At least a more remote area that's served by the Internet. For example, I also judge at Hualapai, and they have no gaming operation at all to speak of. But the Internet might conceivably be appealing to them.
What is the status of having the web capacity for tribes to be able to actually set this up?
That really is a quite serious problem. There's a major digital divide in which many rural areas are disadvantaged in terms of Internet capacity.
Well, in some ways, then, given that, is a conference like this almost putting the cart before the horse? I mean, you need to have web access and a good infrastructure.
You've got over 500 tribes in the country, and they are really quite variously situated in terms of Internet infrastructure. For some of them, it's not a problem. They're ready to go. They're actually involved in e-commerce. And so, no, I don't think it's putting the cart before the horse. Do we need to fix the problems for the other tribe? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean you don't hold a conference for the tribes that are situated well with Internet connections.
Is e-commerce seen as a way to sort of help tribes diversify their portfolios a little bit?
Both diversify the portfolio and to provide economic opportunities where, because of the tribe's location and situation, fewer might otherwise be available. Take Amazon, just as Amazon's Internet store opened initially the United States and now the world to Amazon's doors without having, per se, a brick-and-mortar showroom facility. So a more remote tribe suddenly has a much larger clientele base than they would if they were relying on a brick-and-mortar equivalent of whatever services or products they're providing.
What do you think is a reasonable expectation for how much adding e-commerce could help the economy of a particular tribe?
Well, I think that's going to vary tremendously with the tribe. Take, for example, some of our local tribes like Gila River or Salt River here in the valley. They're all already doing quite well with their brick-and-mortar operations. I'm not sure it would help them much. But if you take a tribe like Hualapai or Hopi, where economic development has not reached, assuming you could get the Internet trunk lines into those places and their tribes who are not well-served, then you've got a much broader potential to help the economy.
Robert Clinton is Foundation Professor of Law at the O'Connor College of Law at ASU and teaches in the Indian Legal Program.
As our everyday activities become more affected by high-tech gadgets, some people feel like they're falling behind in the fast-lane world. That can seem even more dramatic in tribal communities. Tracy Morris, director of the American Indian Policy Institute at ASU, calls it a digital divide.
Now it's really morphed into more of a plural, digital divides, because there are, yes, those in Indian country who are not connected. They may not have access to broadband or computer access at all. There are those that have some connectivity, but it's not great. There are those who are connecting on cell phones only when they're traveling. And so you'll see those folks stopped on the side of the road, you know, talking on the phone and or looking at things on the Internet. So there's multiple divides is what we're seeing emerge in what little literature there is.
What is the danger that people who live on reservations, people who grew up in reservations, are they going to be falling further and further behind? How troubling and how potentially troubling is that?
It's very troubling, and it is. There's a lot of potential to that, because the best data that we had just a few years ago was showing that we still only had about 70% telephone, plain old telephone service on tribal lands. So, you know, that's ubiquitous throughout the United States. That's 99.9%. They're removing universal service support, the FCC is, for telephone service. So to say that we've solved telephone service when Indian lands only have 70%, and now we're moving to this new utility, essentially, and as we move faster and faster, in fact, the FCC adopted new speeds, higher broadband speeds as the required minimum for folks to be able to connect. And Indian Country is working with less than dial-up speeds because of lack of access. They've got, some tribes have good broadband, but not all do. So you've got a lot of variance. So one thing is, yes, we're afraid of folks falling behind, but there's a myriad of reasons. It's different in every community. There are 466 or 566 tribes in this country, and so there's a 566 different reasons.
What is out there to potentially make a difference in that? Because it does appear that this is not exactly a priority, as you mentioned, with the FCC. So what could make it a priority?
What is problematic is the fact that just folks don't realize what an issue it is. I mean, for example, there's been times when, you know, you take somebody out to Indian Country and you say, okay, this is your last time in northern Arizona. You take somebody up to the Hopi Reservation or the Navajo Reservation. You say, okay, you might want to check your cell phone or your internet. It's the last chance you'll get. And they'll be like, oh, no, my service is such and such. You'll be fine. I'll have connectivity. I'll be able to check my email on my phone. But they don't, and they don't realize it's that bad. The other thing, besides the FCC being, you know, proactive, is communities are proactive. We have excellent examples in this state alone of communities that have really just, you know, taken up the challenge and gotten business handled. Gila River Telecom and Gila River has done amazing things. There are folks in Southern California Tribal Digital Village and Tribal Chairman's Association has connected up 19 remote tribal rancherias.
Is there a perception, which is either true or exaggerated, that poverty is an issue? Someone who lives on a reservation, you know, may not be able to even afford the basic broadband service, even if it gets to their reservation. Is that exaggerated or is that true?
It is not exaggerated, but at the same time, Indian Country or Natives, and as with minorities generally, we're higher adopters of mobile technology. Not that that's a save-all, because if you've ever tried to fill out a form on your phone,
Yeah. You
know that it's not exactly easy. it can be done, but it's good. It takes a little creativity and patience. But we are adopting mobile at much higher rates, so it's a catch-22.
Tracy Morris is director of the American Indian Policy Institute at ASU. Tracy, thank you for the time.
Thank you very much.